The following discussion is not necessarily the views of all involved. The goal is to start open and honest discussion in the Christian worldview. Like all things, weigh what you hear with what you know and join us in our pursuit for the truth. Enjoy the podcast.
That's a wild move to say this arc is a political stunt.
It is. Confusion on air isn't funny or enjoyable.
Yeah, Josh is doing a side quest. What is the ontological reality of the arc?
Mary.
What is actually happening? No, it can't be Mary.
All right, I'd like to welcome everyone to the Second Rate Saints podcast. I'm one of your hosts here, Caleb. To my left is...
I am Colton. To my left...
Wait a minute.
No, I'm Josh.
Holy moly, guys. This is
at we least might have to start over.
If this was a video format, that might have been funny.
It still was.
Josh has a distinct voice, I feel.
Okay. Joel, introduce yourself.
I'm cold.
No, this is I'm Joel.
They won't be able to tell the difference.
I'm Joel, and to my left,
it's me, Caleb. We are missing Colton, for those of you who couldn't figure that out, because the audio was rough. We are missing both Colton and Stuart slash Cole, and that's a big bummer, but we're going to carry the show on anyway. Joel, where can people find episodes where Colton and Cole are there?
To check out all of our past and future episodes, you can check us out at secondratesaints.com. If you'd like to leave us a question, comment, or concern, you can use the chat feature on the website. Or email us at secondratesaints@gmail.com. What else is there? Oh, if you'd like to support the pod, check us out at buymeacoffee.com/secondratesaints or use the link on our website. Follow us on Instagram because Josh is posting cool stuff there now. And yeah.
Sick. Love it. Question for technically Joel, but yep. All of us have done. What have you read? Joel, what have you been, what have you read?
There's a collection of liturgy that is non-denominational in its focus, but not necessarily in its content. Anyways, it's a book called Be Thou My Vision, which was actually introduced to me by you, Caleb. But recently I've been going through it to kind of, in a more devotional sense, and that's the way it's intended to be used. It's Be Thou My Vision is put together by Crossway and a guy named Jonathan Gibson. He put together a collection of readings over a 30-day period of different catechisms, of different prayers, quotes, just historical works even, all kind of generic church, right? For those Christians that don't necessarily want to align with a specific, what would the word be? A specific work or a specific...
Sure. Tradition or whatever.
Yeah,
it is aggressively Protestant.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And so that's been super interesting. And it kind of, the basic structure of the day is typically three or four readings of different quotes, a more confessional reading where it's like, you know, forgive me for I know not what I do kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then it goes on to scripture reading, some guided prayer. It's excellent for those who aren't used to a liturgical service or a liturgical devotion. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Check it out. I think it's open enough that anybody could read it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It has every day you're reading something from, you know, either the Heidelberg Catechism or the New Westminster Confession. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, Westminster Confession.
New Westminster is a different place. Probably doesn't have his own confession. Westminster Confession.
Definitely doesn't. That. You can drive through it in the Lower Mainland.
You can, yeah.
And does it have the Augsburg?
Yes.
Okay.
I believe so. Okay. And you're also reading creeds and stuff. I'm doing a bad job of explaining it, but...
It's okay.
That's where I'm at.
Yeah.
It repeats every 30 days, but there's also specific books by Jonathan Gibson that would align with other times in the Christian calendar. There's one, O Come Emmanuel, which is a Christmas-based, you know, goes through Advent. I believe there's another one for Lent, but it might not be out yet. I believe he's working on it.
How, who would you recommend it for?
anybody who's getting a little bit bored with 365-day devotional books. Mm. I think that's kind of the, for me, the target audience, somebody who maybe is taking a more biblical / historical take on the Christian life and doesn't necessarily want to just hear what Joyce Myers wants them to hear 365 days a year. Yeah, just diversify a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because these things aren't just, they're curated, sure, but they're also, they've also stood the test of time. There's a reason why these things stick out in the Christian conscious, like the global consciousness, I guess. Right. There's reason why catechisms and creeds and like foundational documents of Christian belief stick around. And I think that these are a well curated bit that'll definitely increase your understanding of historical Christianity as well as include you in that tradition.
Yeah.
And kind of, you know, guide your prayers towards that. And yeah. So I would recommend it to anybody who's just a little bit bored with their devotional life. Mm-hmm. It does encourage scripture reading. So it's actually not a replacement of that. And in fact, the structure that he lays out encourages a Bible in a year program if you follow it as written.
But, cool.
Cool.
Love it.
The Uncommon Book of Prayer.
Yeah. I think like honest,
it is a little bit of a modern take on the Book of Common Prayer.
Yeah. It seems like a non-denom.
Yeah.
Modified version of the Book of Common Prayer, especially particularly the Daily Office.
Yeah.
But I mean, other traditions had been using like one of my favorite late scholars, not so recent late, I guess, is F.F. Bruce. He used the Book of Common Prayer for his Daily Office devos. He wasn't was an Anglican. And so like, yeah, Daily Office is fantastic. And it's, I think it's what I liked about it was which Joel mentioned, which is it gives a window into that framing, just that articulation, that trying to connect you in with the more rich history and, for lack of a better term, or I think this actually is the term, the Catholicity of Protestantism, right? And it gets you connected in with that. I like it. Beautiful. Also, there's two versions. There's the hardcover, which is like, okay. And then there's like the
leather bound is beautiful.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
I wish the other books don't come in the leather bound version. And I would like, once they do produce those, I would like to have them as copies, because it'd be nice to go through the Lenten one each year and the Advent one. And the one, Be Thou My Vision is just ordinary time. Like it's not specific to a specific time, but excellent. Also doesn't hold your hand too much. That's another thing you'll find if you do devotional stuff. There's not a lot of commentary in it. I think you could say there's no commentary in it. It is just curated. It's not a comment.
Cool beans. 1 to 5.
For a devotional book, which we don't have a category really on this podcast, we don't review devotional books very often.
Yeah.
10 is 5 out of 5.
Love it.
Yeah. I think it would work for anybody. I think that's.
Not very often we give fives.
No.
I feel like I give it more fives than anybody, though. I'm just a little bit. If I finish a book, then I consider that to be part of the book's value as well. Right? Not just my own perseverance to it. So
that's good. That's good. Yeah.
The fact I'm able to finish it is like a plus.
Josh, we're going to be continuing with 2 Samuel.
Mm-hmm.
So do you mind walking us through what was done last? I actually wasn't there for the last episode. So yes. Tell me about the fall of Ner, or the son of Ner.
Yes. So last time on Samuel, we read chapters 4 and 5. And what it was Saul's son Ishbosheth is murdered. Abner, who was the general head of the military of Ishbosheth's army, who was also involved with Saul's army, is helping him. And there's people on David's side that are in conflict with him. A guy named Joab.
That's what his name is.
Yeah. And so Joab has conflict with Abner. Abner attempts to take the kingdom from Ishbosheth and give it to David. Joab, though, while David has met with Abner. Joab confronts David and says, you know, he's trying to trick you, right? And then ends up killing Abner. And so it's a little bit iffy on maybe Abner was playing David, maybe Joab was just angry because Abner killed Joab's brother.
Yep.
Yeah.
Ishbosheth, yeah.
And then what ends up happening is Ishbosheth is murdered and David is anointed king as a result. And then, as previously with Saul's becoming anointed as king, he then fights the Ammonites, and there's a military acknowledgement, a military victory, acknowledging the anointing of the king,
yeah,
which was common at the time.
Yeah.
And so David is anointed king. And then what next follows is his defeat to the Philistines, which is historically significant because since entering Canaan, Israel and the Philistines have been in constant conflict. It was also fighting the Philistines that was the unifying moment, but one of the major unifying moments between David and Saul. And that's also set David apart, the defeat of Goliath, and then also the taking of the ark at the beginning of Samuel 1. And then later, David fights with the Philistines, or at least in the Philistine lands against Saul many times. And then now, as king of Israel, defeats the Philistines. Which is kind of like a full circle moment for that whole relationship with the death of Saul's house, also the death of Saul's and Israel's enemies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this time on Samuel, chapter six,
and chapter six alone, big chapter, because as we talked about, the ark being taken by the Philistines, then God bringing that ark back by himself through fortuitous and sovereign action in time. However, when it landed in Israel, it stayed at this guy's farm.
Yeah.
And so now David is going to bring it back.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is what occurs in chapter 6, verses 1 to 4. David again gathered all the chosen men of Israel, 30,000. And David arose and went with all the people who were with him from Baalah, Judah, to bring up from there the Ark of God, which is called by the name of the Lord of hosts, who sits enthroned on the cherubim. And they carried the Ark of God on a new cart and brought it out of the house of Abinadab, which was on the hill, and Uzzah and Ahio, the sons of Abinadab, were driving the new cart with the Ark of God, and Ahio went before the Ark.
Nice.
Cool.
So when the Ark came back to Israel from the Philistines, it was also on a cart.
Mm-hmm.
And we made a big point there how that's not how they do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was to be carried by the Levites, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So how did they get it on the new cart? Because it says specifically that it is a new cart.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Which it's been there for like 20 years.
Well, I mean, they probably picked it up and put it on a new cart.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, no, I'd imagine. But touching the ark has not historically gone well.
Well, hang on. Historically, it's been fine. It's about to not go well.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough.
Well, it's also what part of the ark are they touching? Also,
yeah, I don't think this is where the point is. Like many things that David has historically done, like a really good job of praying and asking God, hey, what do I do? Right. He's kind of centered, like he's collecting and establishing his rule now, right, over both of all the 12 tribes of Israel. And kind of centering his power in Jerusalem, right? One of the moves would be is to bring the center of worship to Jerusalem, right?
Mm-hmm.
To show the tight bond between Israel's king or ruler.
And dedicating the city to God.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this, that might actually be later why David continues to rule, continues to use the word ruler later on in the chapter, but we'll get there.
Because God is king.
Yes. Do you think by not mentioning David praying about it and asking, seeking God's counsel on it, like there's that should be noted in a quick reading, or do you think it just happens to not be there?
I think that when it happens with Saul, when he goes about his business by himself, it's noted by the writer. But it's also within Saul's character that's been presented to us. Mm-hmm. I think that if we're going to keep David's character consistent with the rest of his representation, I would say he probably prayed about it. Right. Mm-hmm. And it at least seems like if there's a new cart, if there are people, you know, picking it up, hopefully properly. Then there could be some relationship.
He normally does pray about things beforehand, but he also the odd time does things different from the rule book.
Yeah.
And yet he's not. It's not mentioned.
Yeah.
By God that he did something wrong.
But a lot of that can be explained away by Josiah's reform as well. How much of the actual law did he have access to?
Well, and with Eli's failure, with the current priests, what was it? The guy that followed David.
Remember, sorry.
There was the priest that
survived the Saul's
Nahor, something like that. No, that's Abigail's husband.
Abiathar.
That's it.
Abiathar, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How much of a role is Abiathar playing?
Well, the comparison chapter in Chronicles, which is in Chronicles 13. That's a lie. I'm just lying. It is in 13. Mentions the not just like the military parade or not parade but patrol it might be a parade actually the festivities of it all not just that but the Levites are very deeply involved. The present text in 2 Samuel doesn't really get there. Speaking of the military presence in it, do you think that there's a connection between the 30,000 that were lost at the losing of the ark towards the Philistines and the 30,000 chosen now by David? It's the exact same number.
And he just defeated the Philistines.
Yeah.
Which was who took it because they beat Israel.
Yeah. Now they have the ark, but there was 30,000, there was 30,000 lost, which when we talked about that in that episode, we're like, it's probably like most things in the ancient world rounded up. You know, the Greeks were like, and the Persians came with an army of 1,000,000. It's like, no, but thus is the point.
Good guess.
Because I wonder if what he's saying, the author, if it is the same author as Samuel 1, probably.
Same editor, yeah.
Yeah, is that the ark went with who God allowed it to go with.
Okay.
And so because of Israel's sin, God allowed it to be taken by the Philistines. And so it was taken by them. And then you see that judgment occur on the Philistines. And what we're about to see is the Philistines are defeated and God allows the ark to be taken by David. Mm-hmm. And then the guy gets struck down for inappropriately holding it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think that might be the play.
And it's just the 30,000 is just to enhance that
connection.
Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah.
That would make sense. This is one of the last times we hear about the ark. It doesn't come up much more after this. Like once he moves it to where it's going to be, that's kind of it.
You have stuff with Samson, right? Not Samson. Sorry. Saul. Thank you. Shlomo. Samson.
Yes.
A little bit with Shlomo, but
yeah. And then don't you have Nah. Maybe my brain is just not it's thinking missing, properly.
It's
losing the Ark's never actually recorded. Like when it disappears for good.
Yes, which is the problem. But it's also mysteriously missing from the implement list of the stuff brought back from Babylon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Persia.
Yeah. Well, that's because we know it's kept in a warehouse in Nevada.
Area 51.
Oh, or a temple in Ethiopia.
Yeah.
Multiple.
It's a lot of different places depending on what movie Disney's making. But
the Ark has bi-location.
I mean, we do have to say now that the presence of God is everywhere, so.
I mean, it was before as well.
It was before, too, but there's an Ark, so it's a different. What is the ontological reality of the Ark?
Mary.
What is actually happening? No, it can't be Mary. We're not going to explain that on this podcast. Go to Council of Trent or whatever you need, but don't expect that from us.
Don't do that.
Don't do that.
Don't go to Trent.
Good name, though. Anyway. What is the reality of the Ark?
Oh, you want a legitimate answer?
What's the utility of the Ark right now? Because right now we're talking about it like it's a symbol of God dwelling in the place.
Oh, it is.
Like,
it is. It's a political thing. Now,
you think it's political?
Oh, it's a political stunt. The later on, David's going to call.
That's a wild move to say the Ark is a political stunt.
It is. It's the it is the seat of God's throne. It is the proof of his vassalage of Israel. It is the binding thing between the king and the king's representative of God as God's ruler and God being the true king.
Yes.
And so to tie, for lack of a better term, the two thrones geographically related in the same place, that is the city of Jerusalem, is a religio-political stunt.
You think so?
I think so. And I think that that's the point. That was the goal. That has always been the goal. I don't think David's doing something disingenuous. It's like,
that's what it's for.
That's what it's for.
And that makes sense. And I know.
I think also parallel to the political end, because politics and theology played such a big role together, which is to your point.
Yeah. That was my point.
Yeah. Yeah. Is also it's also God acknowledging that Saul was not his king, because Saul didn't do anything with it. He just left it.
Yes.
And whereas David, the moment he becomes king of all of Israel, grabs it.
Yes. And that's emphasized in the first Chronicles passage.
Yeah.
Although it's not emphasized here.
Yeah.
It's implied.
Because one should ask, why does Saul not do anything about it?
Yeah. Because he's too busy under the trees. Somebody's going to get that.
Too busy under his trees. Also, if I were him, I would be kind of scared of it.
True.
Yeah. It would, if he was looking for genuine repentance, he would be the first place I would go to. But
I love the utility, religiosity, political stuff of the Ark. So I just wanted to talk about that before.
Totally.
We ran out of verses that talked about the Ark. Also, it's a footstool, which people always call the mercy seat, but it functions as a footstool, which is very cool.
Do you find it interesting that it's, I'd have to check other translations. Doesn't ESV, which we use here at least, doesn't it say that God sits on the cherubims?
It says the name Lord of Hosts who sits enthroned on the cherubim.
Oh, okay.
And on they carried the ark. Yeah. Okay. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, that full statement, from the ark, which is called by the name of the Lord of Hosts who sits enthroned on the cherubim. I believe that is a full title.
Okay. That's a proper noun.
Yeah. I believe that it's referring to a title, not that.
Or a noun or phrase, I guess.
Yeah.
There's a technical name for that.
Yeah. Like Lord of Hosts.
Yeah.
But it's a longer extended version of it. I believe. I can be wrong. Someone on the internet fact check me and then comment about it. And then.
You're telling me you've been wrong before?
No,
it's just you operate knowing that you could be at some point.
Yes, it hasn't happened yet, but it inevitably will.
Any other thoughts on the first four verses?
Baal Judah is one of the dividing lines in the book of Joshua between in Joshua 15:9. It's one of the boundary lines for the nation of Israel and the, what are they called, tribes.
Okay.
And so it's, anyways, it was just a note that it was, and I, because in Joshua, it's just referred to as Bala.
Yeah.
And then now here it's additional to, it adds Judah there.
Yeah.
Because it's, they've added, because it's the border of the kingdom of Judah.
Yeah.
Was it the border of the kingdom of Judah in Joshua? Well, like it was at the land so ascribed to Judah?
Yeah. Mm. So before it was just Bala, but then because Judah became the dominant area that it was in, it was no longer Canaanite. It gets modified.
Nice.
So
it's good. I was curious to see if it was Benjamite territory that then became part of Judah, or if it was always Judah.
Mm. But. Yeah. Shall we read it and continue?
Probably.
And David and all the house of Israel were celebrating before the Lord with songs and lyres and harps and tambourines and castanets and cymbals. And when they came to the threshing floor of Nacon, Uzzah put out his hand to the ark of the Lord and took hold of it, for the oxen stumbled, and the anger of the Lord was kindled against Uzzah. And God struck him down there because of his error, and he died there beside the ark of the Lord. And David was angry because the Lord had broken out against Uzzah, and that place is called Perez Uzzah to this day. And David was afraid of the Lord that day, and he said, "How can the ark of the Lord come to me?" So David was not willing to take the ark of the Lord into the city of David, but David took it aside to the house of Obed-Edom, the Gittite. And the ark of the Lord remained in the house of Obed-Edom, the Gittite, 3 months, and the Lord blessed Obed-Edom and all his household.
Okay. Just because it's funny, there's a linguistic frustration with the celebration. Technically, as according to at least the commentary that I'm looking at here, a wooden translation, and this will be apparent, the pun in a moment, means with all kinds of juniper wood. That's how they were celebrating. They were all kinds of juniper wooding.
What?
And so it's probably a reference into the instruments.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's not actually the instruments there.
Well, it is, but the celebrating is. Let's just say it's clunky. But it's to me, it's just a funny little thing.
So we don't know what they were doing.
Well, they had a bunch of instruments,
and they might have been made of juniper wood.
Yeah, and they were like they were doing the instrument juniper wood.
That's pretty cool.
Okay.
Is that like the Hebrew version of the metal?
Yeah. Can we start a new biblical genre of music called Juniper Wood?
Juniper Wood. That's great. Awesome. You call me a liar?
Whoa. Joel's going to like this one. Nekon?
Yeah.
Well, first off, it's in the parallel passage in First Chronicles is Kidon, and they're probably just interrelated. Regardless, Nakon, which is related, right, sounds extremely similar. And so to Jewish ears, they may hear what is the Jewish word for stability or sureness.
And Uzzah.
So the idea that they're like, and they're at the town called Stability, and the ox stumbles. Or even worse yet, it may also be Naka, which means to smite. And so the irony of they get to a place.
Yeah. it might be intentionally meaning both as like a.
The smite one may come after, right? Either way, well, like after the event, that's when the linguistic change.
Because that's the same thing with Bethlehem. Is house it's either house of bread or house of violence.
Yeah.
And it's
violent bread.
Well, yeah, because it's also the place where Jesus comes from. But then also every time people are there, they just keep getting murdered.
It's true. Anyway, I find it funny that they're like, and they got to the stable place. Then he fell.
Yeah.
That's funny. I like that. A lot of puns in Samuel. What's going on?
Don't worry. There's more coming.
Oh, man. That's awesome.
Well, that's something that James M. Hamilton Jr., mm-hmm. the guy who wrote Typology, brings up a lot, is, as we talk about all the time,
Monkey sees pattern
is puns are often typological patterns.
Yep.
Nice.
Nice. They weren't intending to be funny, but they are. So
don't worry. There. Some funny puns actually are coming, and they do specifically go to Weight and Glory.
I don't know if puns can be funny because they rely on already knowing their premise.
Did you laugh, though?
Yes, but that's not to say me laughing doesn't make it a good joke. Continue.
Wow. Verse 7.
Yes.
His irreverent act, right? Mm-hmm. They're already carrying the ark improperly, right? There's a comment by a commentary that points out something interesting. There's this idea where it's okay, you have holy intentions, right?
Mm-hmm.
You are sincere in what you're doing, but, and then this is the quote, enthusiasm and even sincerity are not enough when Yahweh's explicit instructions are neglected.
Mm-hmm.
And it's rough.
That's tough.
Right? And that's that obviously preaches as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, doesn't matter your intentions and your sincerity and your joyfulness mm-hmm. that God's doing mm-hmm. this thing. If you're actively going against mm-hmm. not listening to his previous word and not treating his holy things with reverence.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah. Well, there tends to be tension in these things
mm.
because there's also cases where I think this is out of ignorance.
You think?
Maybe. I'm just saying.
Ugh.
What I'm saying is that there are cases where people break the law, but they didn't know it or whatever, and God okays it.
Sure.
Because of their zeal, they just don't know how to obey. And
you can even say the cart is part of that.
Sure. Yeah. I'm tending to speak of people outside of the law.
Now you could say that with the Philistines and the cart
mm-hmm.
and the returning of the ark, you can say that then, but at least the reading here, I think, has more to do with they should know better.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is about people outside of the law.
Sure.
Whereas this guy's inside of the law.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what I mean is that there are times where sincerity and not knowing the law has played out.
Yes, but that's not
without immediate struck.
Sure. That's like you change the equation, you get a different answer. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yes, but what I mean is that there's an intentional fine line.
Yeah, this is true.
And
now in contrast, Jesus' parable to the whole thing of like, hey, the servant that doesn't do the master's will.
Mm-hmm.
The servant that knows to do the master's will, or I'm paraphrasing.
Yes.
Knows to do the master's will and doesn't do it is beaten. The servant who doesn't know and still doesn't do it, he will be beaten too, but, you know, less harshly. Anyway, so
yes,
take that all with whatever that means.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
You can still sin in your ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree on that.
Oh, yeah.
Does this reading necessitate him not knowing?
Oh, I think I think chapter 6, they know what they should be doing.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was going to be my reading as well, but I don't think there's anything that would make it so that he can't mm-hmm. know.
Yeah.
That he's...
Josh is just pointing out the... Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
That he could be ignorant and it still makes mm-hmm. sense.
That there are cases where there are people that are ignorant
mm-hmm.
and God does not judge them for it. just to point that out in contrast to this passage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Irreverent act. Are we going to say it's because he touched it? Is it because he, is it something to do with his motives, or is it has to do with they're not transporting it as God would have them?
It has to be the third one, right? Because it seems like he is just stopping it from falling over.
Mm-hmm. It's, yeah, it's definitely the cart. It's not necessarily just, it's not isolated to him touching it. It's the Samuel, sorry, the Samson thing. It's not just that he cut his hair. It's that he also touched a dead body and he also drank wine and got drunk. He broke the whole thing.
Yeah.
And so.
And that's a good example of kind of how God's justice is laid out is.
Yeah.
In the story of Samson, where it's, you know, he's crossed a couple of lines already.
Yeah.
Right. Like it's.
Whereas someone like Moses.
Mm-hmm.
Follows it pretty consistently, makes that one major error, and then God's like, sorry, you're dying in the wilderness.
Yeah.
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 Where Samson's never read a book, and so.
We don't know that.
No, I'm joking.
But he can bench press doors, or gates, sorry.
Made of bronze.
Yeah. Cool stuff.
And carry them for a kilometer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm making that up.
He carried them a while.
Yeah.
I think it is miles. Like I think it's
what is a kilometer?
The metric Bible.
Yeah. Before we carry on, there's some other important stuff.
Obed-Edom
and the Gittite.
Yes.
Do you know what Gittite? Take a wild guess what Gittite means.
Isn't it in relation to Gideon? Isn't Gideon a Gittite?
It's what you call someone from Gath.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Interesting, eh?
Okay. And who's from Gath?
Yeah. David.
Now, technically, there are some other Israelite names with Gath. There's Gath Hepher, Gath Rimmon, and even Gittium. However, only Gittium is mentioned in 2 Samuel, actually, just a little bit before. But most commentators do go, it's probably Gath.
Yeah.
The guy's probably from Gath. And it's in reference to in 2 Samuel 15:18, later on, there's gonna be a mention of the 600 Gittites who accompanied David from Gath.
Yeah. This was a moment that was brought up in the Nephilim episode.
Really?
Because the Gittites are one of the last remaining groups of the descendants of Rephaim, hence why Goliath comes from Gath.
Yeah.
And David allows them to enter in peace and redeems them, essentially. And it's one of the first notes that you start to see that the Nephilim doesn't necessarily reference giantism in the earlier Old Testament sense, and then further melds into New Testament. Child of Satan, the descendant of your father is Satan.
Yeah.
And meaning eat one of the nations or goat or evil one. And that redemption is kind of plays this merger of the idea of later on God's enemies become God's people.
Hmm.
Do you think to that point and the inverse of that point, but to that same line of thinking, the idea that they drop the ark off at somebody who is not really a true brother to Israelite, is like, you know, related to David's, let's say, war banding days. And in contrast to the last time, it was held by people from Gath and the like, where it cursed them and all this kind of stuff. It blesses Obed-Edom.
So there's a redemptive quality to them joining David.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which gives David some cool messianic stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, also, the guy's name, Obed-Edom. But David took it aside to the house of Obed-Edom, the Gittite. The Gittite's name is Obed-Edom.
Yep.
Which is his grandfather's name, Obed.
Yes.
And Edom is the later version of a descendant of Esau.
Yep.
And so it's like a merger of God's enemies and God's actual, the descendant of the Davidic house.
Yeah.
Of how they're merged together in this individual.
Also, is Obed the son of Ruth? Is that right?
Obed's the son of Ruth.
Okay.
Yeah. This is not Obed. But
and then Jesse is the son of Obed. And
yeah.
Obed Edom, whether it's the same.
Yeah.
But Obed Edom in First Chronicles, shortly after the comparison of this present text, the parallel, only a couple of chapters later, Obed Edom is included among the Levites, serving as a gatekeeper, a doorkeeper of the ark, and as a musician.
So if it's the same one, does that mean he becomes a Levite?
I don't know.
Oh,
because that
means
he can't
be a Gittite and a Levite.
I don't know. Well, no. He can be a Gittite if that's where he's from.
Oh.
Like if that's where he's.
So then
I don't know.
So then you could argue that the reason he goes to Obed-Edom the Gittite is because he knows he's a Levite.
Maybe.
Or does
he becomes a Levite. Yeah. Or does this experience here
make him one?
Kind of. I don't know. We're inferring so much.
But even the name, like,
there's some stuff.
Yeah. But even the, so you've got God blessing a Gittite, which was an enemy, descendant of the Nephilim.
Still could mean a couple of the other smaller towns in Israel. Technically, we can't for certainty know.
Yeah, but this is cooler, so we're going with that.
Yeah. It has to do with God's redemption, and that's like the main story of the Bible, so clearly that's what it meant. And
the redemption name, of the demon giants, which is like crazy.
Yeah, and the name is redemptive. Like, the guy's name is redemptive. It's the whole thing.
Yeah.
Okay, we're moving on. Dem's the facts. And it was told King David. Whoa. And it was told King David, the Lord has blessed the household of Obed-Edom and all that belongs to him because of the Ark of God. So David went and brought up the Ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom to the city of David with rejoicing. And when those who bore the Ark of the Lord had gone six steps, he sacrificed an ox and fattened animal. And David danced before the Lord with all his might. And David was wearing a linen ephod. So David and all the house of Israel brought up the Ark of the Lord with shouting and with the sounds of the horn.
It doesn't even mention that they like, and they learned their lesson. It's just, yeah, anyway, so now they're carrying it, you know, like they're supposed to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's interesting that it's compromise. And then as soon as something goes wrong, you're like, no, we really should do this as God told us to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
something we skipped over that I just want to do, make mention. David's anger.
Yeah.
It talks about it, you know, and it talks about Perez Uzziah, which means outbreak against Uzziah. But it doesn't actually point out what is the object of his anger. I find that quite interesting. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's showing that he is not the one judging Uzziah.
It's God. But,
yeah. Yeah, and David was angry because the Lord had broken out against Uzzah.
Yeah, but it doesn't say if David was even angry at Uzzah, or whether he was angry at the way the Levites were taking the ark, or even if David was possibly angry at God. Doesn't say. Either way, he's fear of the Lord. However, he sees God's desire to bless in Obed-Edom.
Yep. Which also kind of acts as a like, hey, you did wrong, but keep going.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't be disheartened.
Yes.
Yeah. Linen ephod.
Yeah.
Is he a priest now?
Oh, yeah. Don't worry. It's getting more.
Oh, that would be the reason for the linen ephod. It's to tie him into the Levitic.
Don't worry.
Okay.
This whole thing has to do with Psalm 110 and has to do with Melchizedek stuff. And I don't even know if I know enough to really get into it, but yes.
That's cool.
This is all tied into a priest ruler figure and the kingly city.
Well, that's because the kings of other nations were gods. Sons of gods.
Okay.
Yes.
You need to say claim somewhere in that sentence.
Well, I'm sorry. I was trying to speak with enough of an accent to.
I claim no, that the kings
of
the
city. I'm just saying this to start the conversation because we're all going to get there eventually. And I'm not saying we're going to agree with that statement.
Led into all truth.
Yep. I 100% agree.
Carry on.
You don't think the enemies of God in some way are related to Satan?
That's not what I said.
That's what I'm hearing, man.
Anyway.
I'm just saying from like a, if we're going to talk about God's counsel stuff and unseen realm stuff, thanks Heiser. Then I think we have to get into.
Shout out to Heiser.
Thanks Heiser.
Yes. No, you are correct.
Thank you.
Do we want to explain this to the audience?
To the audience, the other kings claim to be descendants of sons of God.
Of their gods. Yeah.
Of their gods, but...
Yes.
And there's some tie-in there of how henotheistic kind of cultures worked, especially with ancient Jewish mindset.
Yep. And that's also why they picked Saul, who was taller.
Here's the thing.
The descendants of the Rephaim, we've already talked about that.
Yeah.
Could have some relation to the Nephilim. It's some fun.
Here's the thing. That is correct. You are correct. However, Saul is specifically not entering Jerusalem as a king. He's entering David is specifically not entering Jerusalem as a king. He's entering Jerusalem as a servant and priest.
Mm-hmm.
Because who's king? Who's the coming king entering into Jerusalem?
Good. Keep going.
That's the whole shtick.
Mm-hmm. Keep going.
I don't know what more you want. Like you can pull in.
Yeah.
There are Psalms like Psalm 24 and Psalm 48 that could be tied to this specific event where it's talking about the king, the God as the king of Jerusalem coming into the holy city, coming into the city of the great king and like all of those sorts of things. However, there's nothing in that Psalm that would specifically like, you know, for sure, but that's there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so there's a great parallel with what you guys are presenting about the other kingdoms and other gods and other ruling structures and the way religion played into that. However, getting back to the political stunt, and political stunt sounds actually, it's rather vulgar for what's going on here.
Mm-hmm.
But what's going on there is David presenting, this is your king whom we are vassals under.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah. No, I think what's important about that is not just that it's specifically denying the other reality.
Yes.
Which is important for that culture because they're surrounded by this, and what they wanted was a king like other nations. But what they're getting is one who acknowledges that God is the only king in town, because that's the one who understands God. Whereas the previous king thought he was a god, and not necessarily, but He behaved like the kings of other nations.
Yes.
And so it's on the text, in the moment, maybe less intentionally, but in the text, it's acting as a counter to that idea. Which is big. Not because of their culture. Ours, it's harder to see.
Ours, it's like, oh, so he's doing the things so the ark comes in. That's cool. Mm-hmm. Also, again, the comparative text in First Chronicles has a lot more sacrifice.
Yeah.
Do you think there's any semblance for six steps? Take six steps and then he's sacrifice.
Hmm.
It's just that's how long it took them to get it set up. No.
The first thing I'm going to is creation.
Yeah. But that's where I went, but I couldn't make any connection.
Yeah. 6 days of work and then.
And then they're working to bring the ark in. I don't know.
Unless you go. Well, because there are a lot of sacrifices that are specifically done on the seventh day of the week.
Yep. But also, you could go with cosmic temple stuff, but the temple's not done until Solomon. I don't know.
But the city's also acknowledged as temple-like.
Yeah, but that comes later in the prophets. Not now.
Yeah, but I mean, Jerusalem being like, it's not specifically listed as Zion yet, but the mountain of the Lord is presented in Exodus. And
yeah, but that's not tied to Jerusalem mm-hmm. quite yet.
Not quite, but no, yet, you know, because they haven't run Jerusalem in a while. So
let's get back to the text.
Nope. Okay. So this is the funny part. He just met his wife again. So he got his first wife back, and they're already arguing.
Well, in fairness, her other husband was like apparently really in love with her.
Yeah.
That's such a sad story. Anyway, carry on.
Okay.
No, wasn't he the mean one?
No, he was the one who like.
Oh, yeah. Michael. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. I was thinking of Abigail.
Okay. David and Michael, verses 16 to 19. As the ark of the Lord came into the city of David, Michal, the daughter of Saul, looked out of the window and saw David leaping and dancing before the Lord, and she despised him in her heart. And they brought in the ark of the Lord and set it in its place beside the tent that David had pitched for it. And David burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. And when David had finished offering the burnt offerings and the peace offerings, he blessed the people in the name of the Lord of hosts and distributed among all the people, the whole multitude of Israel, both men and women, a cake of bread, a portion of meat, and a cake of raisins in each one. Then all the people departed, each to his house. I'll just finish. And David returned to bless his household. But Michal, the daughter of Saul, came out to meet David and said, "How the king of Israel honored himself today, uncovering himself today before the eyes of his servants, female servants, as one of the vulgar fellows shamelessly uncovers himself." David said to Michal, It was before the Lord who chose me above your father and above all his house to appoint me as prince over Israel, the people of the Lord, and I will celebrate before the Lord. I will make myself yet more contemptible than this, and I will be abased in your eyes. But by the female servants of whom you have spoken, by them I shall be held in honor. And Michal, the daughter of Saul, had no child to the day of her death.
So before we get into the Michal, David thing, David fight. Let's note David, who's having a fight with his wife, who is the daughter of the previous king.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't say, "God chose me to be king."
Mm-hmm.
Because as we were just mentioning throughout the entire thing, and I think this is actually the nail in the coffin to what's going on in this passage, David doesn't say, "I'm king." Mm-hmm. He specifically says, actually, "I am ruler."
Yes.
This text, ESV goes prince. Which I think accentuates the vassalship image, the political image and what's going on with the religion and all that at that time. The very complex socio-political event that's occurring as God is via the ark coming into the city. Yeah. But let's get into the fight.
Well, let's start with the burnt offerings first, I guess.
Sure. More priest imagery.
Yeah, that's the biggest part about it, is that he's, you know, well, he is calling himself a ruler later on. He's clearly doing the things that priests do, which is something Saul was specifically not allowed to do and got in a lot of trouble when he started sacrificing stuff.
Yep.
So the overt, then he offered burnt sacrifices stuff seems to be in contrast to Saul, which, again, we have the issue of it was wrong when Saul did it.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody bats an eye when David does it because David's anointed.
Yeah.
But so is Saul.
So there are a few things that are different though.
Saul was specifically told not to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
David is doing it because he gets to.
Yeah. And Saul was told not to do it because he had to wait for Samuel to do it before the battle.
Yep.
Whereas now this is after a military victory and he's bringing in the ark and Samuel doesn't exist.
Well, Samuel, that's a weird way to say he's not in the land of the living.
Yeah, he's in Sheol because that's where the witch brought him back from the dead from.
Yep.
And the prophets right now.
Yeah.
And the priests are, in this text anyways, seemingly vacant.
Well, and the Chronicles fills it in and goes, yeah, no, they're there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, and the, and this goes into the, like we discussed in the previous episode about how Samuel is very intentionally trying to present images about David.
Yeah.
And again, you see this contrast between Kings and Chronicles. They have different theological presentations that they're working with. And so, because you also see another one with Samuel, 2 Samuel 24 and 1 Chronicles, I forget which chapter, about David taking the census.
Mm.
And in the beginning of the Samuel version, it says God entices yes. David. But in the Chronicles version, it says Satan entices David. And
yep.
Yeah. And, well, and there's theological reasons. I think it's parallel to Job. But
that would be how it would be read and has been read.
Yes. But in a, like, in the same way that, like, in Job, the servant comes up to Job and says, the fire of God has come down from heaven. But from the story, we know it's Satan who sends it.
Huh.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And so theologically, it's vacant with prophets and priests, whereas in Chronicles, theologically, it's presenting that they were, not that he's saying they're not there.
Yeah.
But the fact
that he's emphasizing.
Yeah.
Pop quiz. Mm-hmm. When was the last time Michael was at a window?
When she betrayed Saul to protect David.
Very good. Full points.
You think she's betraying?
I don't know. It's just that was a question.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, fair enough. Very specific.
I think it Michael. Has more to do with the verb despise. Mm-hmm. Basra. There it is. Basra. Is first introduced as in part of the promise, those who honor me, I will honor; those who despise me, I will despise.
Mm.
And that's been a pattern throughout the book.
Yes.
And so she sees and she despises.
Mm.
I think that's the, maybe the linguistic hook, or it's like, oh.
Yeah.
Not the window thing.
Yes.
What's going on here? There's something weird.
Well, it's.
Well, I think there's a little bit of like, he's. Shouldn't have taken so many wives.
Fair enough.
Yeah, they tend not to like that.
There's something going on. Whoa, where buddy. It's like, okay, you made fun of me dancing. No kids ever.
No. Right?
Shame on you and your house a little bit. Like that seems rough to me. But then when David's looking through a window, he also loses a child.
Well, he's on top of his.
He's on top of his palace. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's something going on.
What is
on.
The roof if not a giant window?
Well, that's a stupid thing to say. There's something going on with David's judgment being the withholding of children. What and God's judgment also being the withholding of children.
What I'm hearing is if I want to have kids, I need to stop looking at windows.
That would help. Although I'll be honest, I don't know why. there's something going on here because
she also, do you think it's also because she's comparing him to Saul?
A little bit, probably.
Because she's seeing this ostentatious worship of God. Her father never did that.
He was a tall guy, hid behind boxes.
Well, also, well, like,
and she has idols in her household.
But remember, what if she's picking up on the same thing Joel did?
What does that mean?
Why does he get to make sacrifices without the priest, but my dad gets removed as king?
Yeah.
And is hated by God because he does it. And then David dances in front of the ark, which Joshua had to follow behind.
Yeah, it becomes kind of a Cain and Abel story where it's like, why are you happy with what he's doing and not with what I'm doing. And so maybe Michael is an insert here for her father's own expectations.
That's why David immediately says, God didn't just choose me. He chose me over your father.
This is true. Commentary that I read had something to the effect, had an offhanded comment about it where it's like, and then David just responds by stating matter of facts, which never work in a marital dispute. It's like, oh, that's
so funny.
That dude's had arguments with his wife.
No, wait a minute. It doesn't say she's barren, and it doesn't even say David withholds. So it could be that she's just like,
maybe she's withholding.
I'm done. I'm going to go hang out in the palace. Don't talk to me ever.
It could be entirely on her part. Yeah. That's not excluded by the text.
She's like, you can't do anything to me.
This is true.
That's funny.
Now, that would not be within her rights to say.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, in this context. But it's possible.
But also, maybe
I'm not going to give you an error.
Yeah, but she's Saul's line. She's Saul, like you could perhaps make a...
Yeah. He doesn't want to give a legitimacy to that household.
Yeah. Yeah. To Joel's funny,
I don't know.
And honored,
oh yeah,
thing. The distinguished himself is Nick Bad. He honored himself. He
he made himself heavy. Bulk season. What up?
Put on a loincloth and bulk.
So is it
he bulked for honor?
This is base, dude.
So is it arguing that not only because of the Ark's return, but also
the bulk has returned to Israel, unlike the heavy in Levi.
Yeah.
Eli, yeah. When Eli, the heavy, has left us.
Israel has the heavies now.
Has glory.
No, the argument is David heavied himself. He displayed himself. He distinguished himself. He honored himself, because the whole point is that she's talking.
Yeah.
She's what's the term? Sarcasm.
But it's also
she's being sarcastic, is what you're saying.
Thank you.
Okay, cool.
If the glory that was the statement previously was the glory had left Israel, by Eli dying and the ark leaving, but now the king has entered Jerusalem. And God and the Ark has also been brought back in the defeat of the Philistines. So it's undone that.
Mm-hmm.
And so is the argument that all of Saul's reign, not just because of the things he's done, but in that whole period, it was as if God was not present in the midst of Israel, but acting as an outside agent. And now, like being, he said, I will be your God and you will be my people and I will live in your midst in the city, that now that's returned.
Yes.
Whereas during the reign of Saul, now it happened because of Eli, but during the reign of Saul, that was not the case.
Yeah.
Whereas now with the reign of David, the Lord is in his midst.
Yes.
And it was brought in by a king priest who entered a city after a military victory.
Yes.
Kind of like Jesus.
Kind of. Little different.
To be fair, Jesus kind of like that, because we're chronology gets weird.
No.
Okay.
No, because Jesus is before time.
Don't start with that. The donkey thing has a very specific place in linear time.
The donkey does, but he does. Hey, before the foundation of the world, the lamb was slain.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that taking place in time is in time.
Yes.
Yes.
We're not going to. Yes.
One last point. David also uses own sarcasm back to Michael when he's just like, by these slave girls you spoke of, I will be held in honor.
Yeah. They just loved it.
Yeah. Which is wild.
Here's the thing. Previously I've always seen this as like, just a, hey, don't be shameful in front of people or whatever. Like, don't embarrass yourself. I am now a little more convinced it has more to do with Saul's reign and David's usurping of that by God's hand.
What I've seen this text used as almost exclusively, actually, you know what? I think exclusively, I've never heard anything else other than this, is
you should worship God with unabashed praise that others people would think would be going too far.
Yeah.
That's what this text means. And it's like, okay.
What? I don't think so. Still not going to do burnt offerings.
Not going to bulk up in a loincloth.
Yeah.
We're doing it. Well,
the argument being is, hey, I think at least this is the way I've seen it applied. Somebody's doing something that's, let's say, a little
flag waving.
Yes. I wasn't going to say that.
It's flag waving.
It's flag waving. Let's make it they're flag waving at the front of the church. They're distracting. They're all like, and you're going to be like, hey, man, like you're, and it's like, hey, don't judge me for how I worship God in my extravagance and blah, 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 blah. Extravagance isn't the right word. You get the point. And that's what I've heard this text used for. And then it's just, oh, okay, whatever, buddy.
Yeah.
23.
David danced before the Lord. He also, again, it was a priestly thing that he was anointed to do. He was still very well within the bounds. I think the disagreement from Michael does just come more from her father no longer being the anointed.
Mm-hmm.
It was cool when he was the underdog, but now he's on top. She's not giving him the time of day.
I wonder.
What are you looking up there, Josh?
23:28.
Oh, yeah. No, I know that one. No, I...
The Luke,
what?
What were you saying? The what did you say? The
confusion on air isn't funny or enjoyable.
Yeah, Josh is doing a side quest.
No,
I was at because you said, "Oh, I know that one." When I said,
"Yeah, it was sarcasm," because you just said numbers.
He was using Luke sarcasm.
23:28 is when Jesus is walking out carrying the ark.
Hold on, what? And hold on, can you say that sentence again?
I'm misremembering this.
Luke 23:28.
Yeah, where Jesus comes out carrying the ark.
The cross.
Okay.
Cool.
Oh. And he says, and there's the, followed him a great multitude of people and of women who are mourning and lamenting for him. But turning to them, Jesus said, daughters of Jerusalem, do not weep for me, but weep for yourselves and your children. For there, behold, the days are coming when they will say, blessed are the barren wombs and never bore. Blah, blah, blah.
That has to do with Titus's sacking of Jerusalem.
Yes. No, what I mean is because we already brought up the where Jesus enters on the donkey.
Yeah.
And he's being praised. They think he's, you know, the Davidic representation there. But it's the women that David mentions. He's entering the city. He's being praised. He's bringing the ark. He makes a sacrifice. He's priest king. Blah, blah, blah. There's the group of women that he mentions. And then his wife is made barren. Or doesn't produce children. And then you have Jesus leaving the city, wearing the crown of thorns, carrying the cross.
There has to be one typological connection in an episode where you and I just go, what?
No, I'm just thinking, dude. It just made me think.
Okay.
So
okay.
I'm just
spitballing.
Yeah. Okay. And then he makes a reference to these women who it's going to be better to be barren than to not be barren.
Mm. So you're saying it was God's blessing to make Michael barren?
No, that's everything's not what happened. Everything's reversed.
Ah. Okay.
Hmm. Interesting.
I think about it, the less I'm convinced.
The more I think about it, the less I want to.
But there's just an interesting, because he's leaving, everyone's mourning rather than praising.
I think the main point there has more to do with the whole Michael versus the slave girls thing. It has something to do with worshiping God rightly and serving him rightly. Having to use a popular Christian term today, I think does work, even when you read the Old Testament. To have a kingdom mindset.
Yes.
Those who are maybe rich in worldly eyes cannot see.
Mm-hmm.
But those who are, even the slave girls or the slave, like the low of society, right? They will. They recognize it and they will honor it. Right.
Oh.
It's the lifting up of the lowly and the lowering of the those who are high.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think there's parallel between David saying, no, I'm in Luke. Let me go back. I'm almost there.
Welcome to the ASMR of Josh flipping through his Bible.
I will say, I will make myself more contemptible than this, and I will celebrate before the Lord, and I will be abased in your eyes. The
keep flag waving. No, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I'm going to flag wave harder.
The about how his he's being sarcastic, but also in a non-sarcastic sense, him saying, no, I will continue to abase myself for the Lord in the same sense that later John the Baptist.
Yes.
I will make myself less.
Yes.
Because he must become greater.
Yeah.
I've been anointed as king. God's king.
God's king. I am prince. I am ruler. Yeah. Vassal treaty stuff. The whole.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who is king here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of makes him and Michael co-workers in a way. Both princes. We'll continue on from that though.
Get it? Because Michael's a guy's name. Or is the
different
archangel
Michael? I didn't realize.
Is the archangel Michael a woman? God's not a woman.
No, don't even
archangel
start with
Michael
that.
Is.
That's.
I feel like you could probably figure that out really fast by looking at what gender pronouns he has.
Yeah.
And the fact he's not a human being.
Correct.
Yeah.
He's neither.
Yeah. So that's an interesting thing with Michael the archangel. I'm so sorry. Are we at the end now?
It feels like it.
It feels like we're at the end.
Yeah.
Where we start deconstructing angelic genders.
I don't know if this was a good episode, but I enjoyed it.
It was funny.
There's been a couple episodes like that lately where I'm like, who knows if this will help anyone, but good talking to you guys.
Thanks for having us over.
Oh, man.
Is there anywhere else where you want to derail? Actually, I have something I want to derail about. Josh, you have a Wii plugged in and it's 2025.
Yeah, I noticed that earlier. I was looking at the back of his TV because of where I'm sitting. I'm like, those are Wii.
Yeah.
I plugged a DS on.
The DS is my sister's. No,
what year is it, Josh?
No, but my girlfriend wanted to play Mario Kart.
Oh.
On the Wii.
Sure, dude.
And I crushed her.
You're lying.
I don't think you won.
I won every time.
I don't think so.
No.
It took me 8 races to not be in first place.
You'd be a gentleman.
A gentleman.
I know. I was.
Oh, man.
I was trying. I wanted her to win so bad.
Trying to live in 2008?
I wanted her to win so bad, but I couldn't fake it because
she's going to listen to this podcast, dude.
I know. We already
can't believe you're doing this.
We already had this conversation.
Apparently, I believe in your girlfriend's victory over you more than you do.
Unfortunately, you think it's harder to let her win than to just win a game of Mario Kart. Rough.
I can't believe you'd lie to the world saying that you beat her at Mario Kart. This is immortalized on the internet.
You know, we're going to have this online forever.
Yes.
AI is going to be trained on the fact that you just dunked on your girlfriend in a podcast.
Yes. And what I need to say is because you can't fake it because they know, and then that's demeaning.
Yeah. I don't know.
So you're not a good actor.
Correct.
Yeah, if you're a better actor, the difference between a...
Because statistically, if we keep playing, I'll lose.
Hmm.
You think so, eh?
Yeah.
Hmm. Was your Wii just out when she got here?
No, she asked to play.
But it was out because you wouldn't ask to play
Mario
Kart Wii.
It was in the box.
Without the premise of there's already a Wii.
Do you have Mario Kart?
That's good.
What's the best Mario Kart?
I like the Wii version.
64.
See?
64
right.
is true.
See? He's right.
He's right. And I have it and we can play.
That's.
No, we have like podcast stuff to discuss.
Yeah. We can discuss that while playing.
Oh, yeah. The podcast is still going on.
Yeah. There is an announcement before Joel actually leads us out. This was one of the weirdest derails ever.
Well, it felt more like we were just discussing Josh's day. Less like it was usually it's me saying something unhinged.
There's a very exciting interview coming up.
Yeah.
An interview from a denomination that we don't have represented on the podcast. Mm-hmm. What?
Mormon.
No.
We're interviewing Donald Trump like every other podcast.
No.
Darn.
He's a, what is he, Presbyterian?
Get it?
No. No.
I thought it was funny because I thought you were doing a president Presbyterian.
Oh, president. No, I couldn't do that.
Holy moly, guys. I was trying to do a plug for our own podcast.
Forget about that. What denomination is Trump?
I gotta make a joke of Presbyterian.
Presbyterian.
Wow.
Oh,
guys, this is rough.
He doesn't give him advice.
Anyway, we're going to be interviewing a Lutheran soon. So stay.
It is not. Anyways.
Stay tuned for that. I'm excited about that. We'll see what these guys do. Hopefully, they still are up to being interviewed. Okay, Joel, take it away.
Welcome to the Signal. goodbye to the Secondary Sage podcast. If you'd like to check out all of our past and future episodes, check us out at secondratesaints.com. If you'd like to support the podcast, check us out at buymeacoffee.com. If you'd like to keep up to date with what Josh is posting on Instagram, check us out on Instagram. Love you all. Have a good week. Read the book I said. We don't get money from that yet.
Tell your friends.
Tell your friends. About the podcast. Tell your mom about us.
Tell your teachers. Your mailman and your milkman.
Yeah. Again, what year is Josh living in where you have a milkman?
But and your internet provider.
Is there somewhere groceries? That has. Welcome to the Angel Wars podcast.